facilities, public works, to order. We have, I believe, everyone in attendance. You and governance. We are short one.
Yep.
That's our roll call. Prove the minutes from the previous meeting. Did everyone receive a copy of the?
Mr. Chairman, I'm pretty sure John O'Dea is missing, right?
Yeah.
That's right, John.
John.
Yeah, so this is still just new enough, guys. Did everyone receive a copy of the June minute? I have any corrections to those or a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Supervisor Grady, do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Frankel. I'm getting all these. Any questions? All those in favor, you and governance?
Aye.
Ready?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Chairman, committee members, supervisors, you and governance, comments. We are in the midst, and you'll hear from our reports here tonight from the department heads, the midst of our summer season with paving. The Parks Department is still working on the Emerald Ash Board, but boy, they leaps and bounds. And you'll hear the reports tonight from the facilities people and the golf, and golf is, after this miserable, odd little spring and summer, doing quite well, and they'll miraculously fill us in on that. We also have heard at the county board level some discussion on the Kemper Center, and Gary Gronke has agreed to come here tonight to address a committee on one of the items that was brought forth, and that was the catering practices. So I'm going to expect and have the committee respect that that's what we're talking about tonight, the catering at Kemper. We're not talking about personnel. We're not talking about any other items at the Kemper Center this evening. So with that, those are my comments. Any supervisors? You and governance, yes.
I'd like to bring up something. You say we can't talk about anything else other than catering tonight as it relates to Kemper?
Correct.
Okay, in this form of comment then, what I would like to say is, a few months ago, when the issues about Kemper Center came up, at the board level, I was asked by another board member, who I won't name, if I would like to go on a tour of Kemper Center. And I said yes at that time, and I think there was at least five other people. Just to, you know, get a look, you know, get a feel. I'm a new supervisor. I wanna check things out. And I was waiting for that person to get back to me, and that person never did, either by a phone call or by email. So I emailed that supervisor, and I want to know what's up. When are we going on this tour? Because I want to see. I know Gary, but I want to see the whole facility. I've been in the good parts, let's say, but there's unknown parts to me of Kemper Center. And with all the discussion of Kemper Center, I thought it might be appropriate for several of us to get a tour of the facility, but the supervisor never did get back to me. So month goes by, we have another county board meeting, and I asked the supervisor, what happened? You know, you never responded to my email, for one, when I asked you what was going on, and you never called me on your own. And he said, oh, it's all taken care of. I talked to Gary at Valancourt. It's fine. And I'm like, well, for you, I would like to have been there to hear that myself. So what, you know, we can talk about the catering, but I just want to go on record saying I would like a tour of the facility. I think, Gary, you're the one I would see, right? And I would like to invite anybody else that wants to go along as well, just, you know, so we get a feel of what's going on there as well.
Yeah, it's a okay. It's a very interesting take a tour. I'm sure Matt would be glad to do it.
Sure. So I just want to be clear, though. Who would I contact? Gary, would I contact you? Would I contact Matt to set this up? All you? Okay, I got you now. All right, thank you.
Because there's many parts that have never been touched. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what you've probably seen is what is the good stuff, and that's where they operate on them. So
sure.
When I say we're not discussing anything else, I say they're just what you did is fine. But catering was the big thing that was brought up. The personnel issues, we can't touch those. They operate their own business there. just like Pringle operates their business.
Sure, no, that's fine.
We're not going anywhere near that, and we can't do that unless we went into closed session, and we're not doing it. We have a good agenda of our own here, and Gary's been, again, gracious enough to come here to talk about those. Supervisor?
Yes, may I make a comment?
Sure.
It was brought up in an additional meeting in regards to the finances that were spent at Kemper Center, and I did look into it, and I talked to Mr. Gerritsen and Jim Kupfer, and I got an itemized list, and it's missing some information, and I'd like to get a very detailed itemized list in regards to where those dollars are spent. And since we're not going to be talking about that tonight, is there a time that we will be able to discuss what dollars are spent and where? I'm under the impression that we are giving them $50,000 for capital improvement, but we're also giving them $100,000 for their operations. And I've also been told that we have no say in their operations, but yet we're giving them $100,000 for operations. So.
That would be, now, Mr. Kupfer, I believe, gave you a pretty good accounting of that.
He gave me, I have it here. He gave me a list of things that have been updated over the years. I was hoping for something a little more detailed as to itemize, like this is the year this happened with the dollar amount. I see that last year we gave them $800,000-something. And
last year we gave them $800,000?
No, to clarify that, that's not
okay, correct. Well, this is what the list says. This is the list that I have.
Well, there was a project, because we still own it, the property, so as a good landlord, we still take care of the assets there. So what we did is we did a major project last year to restore the parking lots, and that. So that's investment in our, like you would if you were a landlord of a home, you still are responsible. That's what that was. So we didn't give them, we executed that project. John Rudy was the project manager, so.
They ended up getting the $50,000 that they normally get for the capital improvements, plus an additional $100,000 for operations.
Correct.
On top of that, so if we're giving them $100,000 for an operational budget, or at one point I was told that it was a donation, at a different point I was told that it was a grant, and then it was clarified by Jenny Tonkies that it was an allocation. But the paperwork that I have from Jim Kupfer says that it's a grant. So I had some questions in regards to that too, because when you start writing grants, is it just like an automatic? Are we just automatically giving Kemper Center a grant, or are they filing for it? Are they applying for a grant? Because the state has rules on all those things,
right,
especially with a 501c3. So
we've taken it down to zero for certain years. So I mean,
I'm just looking at the paperwork that
I have. It's not something that's. But, Jim, can you...
Well, it's voted on every year as a part of the budget.
Right.
And the board approves it.
So for Supervisor Gilmore, can you get her more?
Yeah, I just haven't gotten all the detail from the $50,000 from the folks at Kemper yet.
Okay.
And I know I promised you I got the audits, and I have audits from 13 and 14. I do not have the 15 audit yet.
Okay.
It's not done yet.
Supervisor Basham?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For kicks and giggles, may I also have the same information that you're going to send to Supervisor Gilmore, and when you organize the tour with Supervisor Wamble, I would like to piggyback as well.
Anything else from you, the government, Supervisor? So now we'll move on to citizens' comments. Citizens' comments would be allowed on any item before this committee, highways, parks, golf facilities. The only thing I ask is that you give us your name and address, and you are limited to 5 minutes. Do any citizens wish to address the committee?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Excuse me, Matt Flynn, 7945 18th Avenue. I'm also in the owner of Sophistic Catering, and what I wanted to speak to today, I want to address the board, not about the issues between Kemper Center and my catering business. Those issues can no longer be delayed and by the slow paced work of Kenosha government. In the real world, things move a lot quicker. That's the way things are. Those issues are now being addressed by a legal process that we believe will result in faster remedy in order to protect our company and its clients as the dates of their events are drawing closer and closer. I would like to speak to the board about the task you all have in evaluating the status of Kemper Center, their contract with Kenosha County. If it is the goal of Kenosha County to make Kemper be self-sustainable, then I believe the larger concern here is that all but one of Kenosha area caterers have been either banned from the property or refused to use Kemper Center as a venue for their clients based on their experiences with Kemper management. Case in point, after my company's been banned by Kemper Center for 18 years, our catering firm began once again under a new director allowed to provide catering services to Kemper Center. That was Don Gillespie. Events that we catered by our business in 2015 at Kemper Center generated over $100,000 in sales. Of that, over 20% was paid Kemper in commissions. Okay. Most, if not all, of these events would not have taken place at Kemper Center had the client not been allowed to select catering as their caterer for their special event. In other words, no money was generated at Victoria, the premier caterer at Kemper, been allowed to do these events, or if the client wished for them to do these events. Kenosha is lucky enough to have a number of qualified catering firms, all of which have a loyal catering base. The chance of losing these potential bookings by forcing them to use one catering firm that the client's not comfortable with, in my opinion, does not equate to increased bookings at Kemper Center. By limiting the options, only one caterer has the chance to have events at Kemper Center. One could look just north to Racine as a good example of what I'm talking about here. Festival Hall and Memorial Hall, owned and operated by the city, uses one caterer at its property. Like Kemper Center, Festival and Memorial Hall need taxpayer money to continue to operate. They, like Kemper Center, use only one caterer for their events, thus eliminating all other referrals from caterers. This morning I did a simple Google search for banquet halls and caterers. In Kenosha, the halls that allow customers to use caterer of their choice have a high booking rate, such as the Southport Beach House. They're booked, completely booked. Where others like Kemper Center struggle to get bookings. In closing, I want to strongly suggest that you contact the county executive's office in order to view the Kemper file before deciding if you want another 25 years of wasted taxpayer money to support the operation of Kemper Center as it stands now. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Any other citizens comment? Yes.
The other half. My name's Annette, 7945 18th Avenue.
Annette?
Flynn.
Sorry.
I just want to touch on a few things. We have a contract with Kemper. There's a discrepancy on whether or not we do. We do have a contract with Kemper Center. And a client will come to me to book a party. They find us through a Google search. And, you know, we'll write up a proposal, do a tasting, things like that. Then they will go to Kemper, view Kemper, you know, go on tour and everything. They want to book, but then they're told that there's another $1,000 for them to use our services. Another 18% tacked onto the bill, another 19% and a $2.50 charge, which puts us way out of the market. When you're comparing apples to apples, you've got Victoria at, I don't know, $18, $20 per person, no extra costs, and then ours brings it up to $40. I have now lost that client to Kemper, to another caterer, where I could have taken them to another vendor, or venue, I'm sorry. So that's the one point. And on yesterday in the newspaper, there was an article run by Kemper. Right on the bride's page, you've got Victoria's Catering, and then you've got Kemper, and you've got Bristol, and all these places. And on this ad that Kemper Center ran, they list the phenomenal package for $7,995 for up to 150 guests, which in the listing, and I've got a copy if you guys want a copy of it, it lists Victoria's Catering, 150 people, past hors d'oeuvres, cocktail hour, two-meat buffet, coffee station, and then it lists a wedding cake for 150 people from Sweet Discoveries in Kenosha, Sunnyside Florist with a number of different centerpieces, DL Entertainment, not sure who they are, for 8 hours of music and dinner, and Brian Cowan Photography, which is recently located into Georgia. My question is, where can Kemper Center actually make any money? Because if they did these types of packages, 52 weeks out of the year, it only generates $416,000, a big losing proposition for Kemper Center, in which, not to bring up a previous employee, but she lost her job for bringing up that exact point. So preferential treatments, running ads in the newspaper, we don't like it. You guys are misrepresenting us, and that's kind of where this whole thing came from. The other, I know there was a May 17th meeting with County Exec that we had, and there was a Barna Banks who was there, who does audits for the city and the county of Kenosha. I recently learned that he works for the office where Orendorf and Catherine Andrea, who sit on the board of Kemper Center, they are all three CPAs under the same roof. Conflict of interest in my book, as far as that, asking for the County Exec to ask for an audit by Barna Banks on Kemper Center. So I just want to add that little note in there. It's just not, which is okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other citizens wish to address the committee? If not, citizens' comments are closed. So the first item on our agenda was Mr. Gronke, but a couple reasons. Because then he can be released, and then we can go on to our other business. And Gary, I guess the curiosity has peaked from people that don't know the process at Kemper Center, and that's what I'm going to ask you to roll out. Okay. And I guess
I have all kinds of things to hand out.
I guess the only question I'm going to ask, and I'm going to let you start. Mm-hmm. Are caterers treated differently at Kemper Center?
No, and I'll explain why and what's happening there now. Okay. I brought all the rules.
We'll
first of all, I want to thank everybody for being here. Some of you I've known for years, some of you I've never met before. Despite what some people say, I have been born and raised and lived in Kenosha my entire life. I live a couple blocks from Kemper Center. But what's more exciting is that this year marks the 40th anniversary of Kemper Center. It was 40 years ago that Penny Enright saw the foresight of what Kemper can really be. She went to Kemper Hall. Kemper Hall closed. If you remember, all of you old enough to remember, they more or less condemned the property. It was going to be torn down and condominiums. A developer was in place. Penny put together a group of concerned citizens and some very generous people, raised the money mainly through Penny and Roth to purchase the property along with a grant. They purchased the property and offered it to the city. The city turned Penny down. She then went to the county. The county saw the foresight to see what Kemper could be someday, and the county took the gift from that time then, Kemper Center, Inc., to become a county park. So for the past 40 years, the county board and the Kemper board has worked in partnership and has made the jewel what Kemper Center is today. I mean, I consider it a jewel. I'm very proud to live in Kenosha. I lived in Kenosha my entire life. And I think a lot of things we have in Kenosha are very valuable things that we don't have anywhere else, and Kemper's one of them. Including, and I don't think anybody ever foresaw this 40 years ago. And this gives you an idea of all the different aspects of business Kemper's in. We're going to talk about catering tonight. But we're in a lot of other business than catering. We have the Anderson Arts Center. It's the only public arts center in Kenosha County that's open to the public. It has a full working gallery. It has a full student gallery. In there, we have Twilight Jazz, which is operated through the Anderson Arts Center. We have over 3,000 people come to our jazz concerts every third Tuesday throughout the summer. We have classes for adults and children at the Anderson Arts Center. I just had lunch with Jake McGee. I don't know if any of you know who Jake is. He's now the president of the Boys and Girls Club. I knew him when he was with Kingfish. We had lunch, and the first thing he said, Gary, how can we partner? How can we partner the Boys and Girls Club and Kemper Center? I said, there's a lot of ways we can do it. There are things we can offer we can't, through children's programming, through adult programming, which they cannot offer. It's an exciting partnership we're going to have with them. We offer bus tours. The Durkee Mansion, a lot of people don't realize that the very oldest part of Kemper is the Durkee Mansion. That was Senator Durkee's home. He gave that property to the Episcopal Church when he became governor of Utah. He died while he was governor, never came back to Kenosha. The school just grew and eventually became Kemper Hall that we all got to know that closed in 74. We have soccer fields. We have a lot of recreational going on down there. We have the Kenosha Unified Ice Cream Social going on down there. We have ballroom dancing classes going on down there now. Then we have the signature events. You know what? I'm going to start handing this stuff out. If you can pass that around. I didn't bring, I don't think, enough for everybody, because I didn't think it was going to be such a large group. But I did bring enough for every county board supervisor. In there, you're going to see our annual report. And one thing about the annual report is the one thing that I think everybody at Kemper now is very proud of, is that we now have 8 signature events. And some of those events we came up with. A lot of the events we did not come up with. Kemper did not come with those ideas. Somebody else came to us with those ideas, saying, hey, what about doing something like this? Well, what do you think about doing something like this? I think it'd be a great event for Kemper. It'd be a great event for them. They own a business. Kemper Center, Inc. is also a business. We have such events in there like Mother's Day, the Fish Fry, Christmas at Kemper, Oktoberfest, the ballroom dancing. Haunted House is a great example. We didn't come up with the idea, although you'd think you'd drive by Kemper, you'd think, what a better place to have a haunted house. The Teen Task Force came up with that idea, and we partnered with them. And it's a great partnership. They raise a lot of money for their cause. We raise money for Kemper. The car show, which is new. This will be the second year for the car show. In fact, I think we're handing out a flyer on that right now, which is also another great event. The great thing that Kemper has going for it is its grounds, its location, and its beauty. And I'm going to remind everybody here, even though I wish I would say that we got more help, but all the grounds, from cutting the grass to maintaining the buildings to painting the walls, is done by Kemper Center, Inc., including all the gardens, which are managed by all the volunteers. Every tulip that's planted there every spring, everything is done by Kemper Center, Inc. Not only do the volunteers of Kemper Center, through their generosity, make Kemper Center so important, but we take the county's investment of $150,000 a year and multiply that times 5. I mean, our budget, I mean, if anybody, I think a county board supervisor asked Frank, how do you spend $150,000? And I thought he had a great answer. $50,000 is, we just totally redid the back of Kemper Center, put in all new fencing to protect the garbage. We had to do things like that. We had a new hot water heater that went out, cost over $9,000. When furnaces go out, we pay for that. We pay for a lot of things. In fact, we're about to start the restoration of the Anderson Art Center. One of the big projects we want to have happen is we want the Art Center to become accredited. We want it to become an AAM museum, along with the Durkee Mansion. And the things we have to do there, we have everything in staff in place already. Curator, administrator, traveling national shows, everything. We need climate control, we need a better security system. All that can be acquired, that's going to take some money. But this year we're starting to restore the exterior of the Arts Center to make it more presentable. It's going to cost around $25,000. Just to repair the shutters, clean them up, paint them, $25,000. That's going to come from the $50,000 that you give us. The other $25,000 will be spent by buildings and grounds at Kemper. Where does the other $100,000 go? Well, Frank had a great answer to that. See, you have to ask We Energies, because literally, depending on what our heating bill is a year, depending on what our winters are like, you got to keep in mind how old those buildings are. I mean, our heating bill is anywhere from $65,000 to $95,000 a year with We Energies. If we have a good winter, it'll be around $60,000. If it's a bad winter, it's going to be pushing $100,000. We got to pay those bills. We can't tell We Energies, come back in 2 months. We have to generate revenue constantly to make that happen. And I personally think that after the last 40 years, and I haven't been on the board for 40 years, the only person that's still alive who's been on the board since the very beginning is Penny Enroth. And she's still on the Kemper board, she's still very much active, and she very much is still a huge donor to Kemper Center. But I think our relationship with county government has only flourished. I think we have a better working relationship with the county board now than we've had in years. There have been times where it's been a little bit more rockier than other times. At this point, I would love to have everybody on this committee who's also associated with this committee come down to Kemper and have a meeting. I think I would recommend doing it twice a year. Have it one on the main campus, which is known as Kemper Center, Inc., or Kemper Hall, and the other meeting at the Anderson Arts Center. So you actually see both buildings on campus, get to tour them, and see what's going on. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on down there. We are a lot more to Kemper than weddings and funerals or anything like that. We have a lot of things going on down there, a lot of exciting things. And we have to operate Kemper like a business. It is a business. It's a private 501c3. And we must employ the best business practices that we can to achieve our goals. Because bottom line, the Kemper Center Board of Directors is liable for anything that happens down there and any debt we have. The only thing we always hold in reserve is $100,000 according to our lease, that we have that as a cushion in case if we ever default, the county can take that $100,000 and bail us out. We have never come anywhere near defaulting in the 40 years that we've been there. In fact, we have grown every year. Okay, now, in fact, before I forget, I want to remind everybody, August 30th at Twilight Jazz, that will be the 40th anniversary celebration. We're going to invite people from the county. Penny, as of right now, will be there. We're going to have the largest birthday cake anybody has ever seen, or anniversary cake. We're talking to a couple people right now about fireworks, and the Parkside Reunion Band is playing that night. It's going to be a great celebration of 40 years of a partnership with the county. In fact, you'll start seeing ads probably in the next couple of weeks in the Kenosha News and elsewhere promoting that event and inviting people down to the campus of the Anderson Arts Center and to celebrate 40 years of Kemper Center. Okay, catering. In front of you, you have two main things about catering right now. You have a catering outline bullet points, and you have our Kemper Center room rates. The Kemper Center room rates are two sheets, because one is for Saturday only, and the other one is any other weekday. And you can see that the prices change a little bit, because we're, of course, like any place, we're trying to get more weekday rentals. And we actually are, because a lot of our business now are funerals and funeral lunches, and there are funeral directors in this town who don't have funeral homes, and they need a building, and need a facility, and we become great partners with them, and they're using the facility, and we have a great chapel. And so that's actually a part of our business that has grown. When it comes to catering outline, the catering outline sheet, bullet points, this is how Kemper is operated today. If anybody called there right now, talk to Cindy Gruby, who is our new food and banquet hospitality manager, who's doing a great, great job. Our business is going only in one direction, forward. The first bullet point, any caterer, and I mean any caterer, can come to Kemper. Is welcome as long as they have a catering license and proof of insurance. Cindy called me today and was kind of excited. A caterer from Chicago booked with us today for a very large wedding in September. And never been to Kemper before. Now, they did this all on the phone with the caterer. The caterer will be coming up now to look at our facilities and everything, but the bride and groom has been at Kemper, and they booked us. And it's extremely exciting. This past weekend, we had four major events, Friday and Saturday. Four different caterers down there. Anybody can cater down there, as long as you pay the fees, which I'll get to in a minute. You got to keep in mind where Kemper operates at a disadvantage. You know, I don't know if any of you are members of the Country Club or Strawberry Creek or ever go to Circa on 7th. Those are all great three establishments. I respect Circa on 7th a lot. I mean, they've done a great job. They have a great facility. But you go to Circa on 7th, you're going to use Circa on 7th's kitchen, nobody else's. You go to Strawberry Creek, use Strawberry Creek's kitchen. You go to Kenosha Country Club, you use Kenosha Country Club's kitchen. We, of course, don't have that luxury. We don't have the money to hire a staff and to hire an in-house catering service. And we don't want to do that, because that will kind of limit in terms of what we can do with our customers. So right now, we have three caterers that we have menus for and that we recommend. Let's play pretend. Let's say you're getting married again.
Not again. I got married at the Kemper Center September 6, 2014.
Thank you.
And I had a caterer that was not on that list.
Anybody can cater a Kemper. Anybody can.
And the person that booked it with me didn't know who I was.
Good. Right now we have three caterers, and those are what we call our recommended caterers. If you walk in out of the blue and you don't have a clue in terms of who you want to use for a caterer. You don't have a name, don't have a clue. We have three that we'll recommend. We'll recommend Victoria's, who is our preferred caterer. We'll recommend Sophisticatering or Twisted Cuisine, who are our two recommended caterers. All three of those menus are placed in front of you, and you can choose anyone you want. There is no swaying to any one caterer. Actually, I think two of the four events this past weekend were done by Twisted. They do a great job. Victoria, now, I hope somebody would ask me the question, why was Victoria's chosen to be the preferred and the other two being the recommended? Victoria's Catering was chosen as our preferred caterer because of her past involvement in Kemper Center. Dating back to what someone alluded to a couple county board meetings ago, when the South Conference Center was totally restored, that project took around $3 million to totally restore it. And we had a restoration committee, and we had people from all walks of life sit on that committee. So because we were kind of creating a conference center, a kitchen, and I mean, I'm a graphic, I'm in marketing. I don't know anything about restoration or running a banquet facility. We had a lot of people sit on that committee. Vicki was one of them. She was one of them on the ground level in terms of making that facility what it is today. And she also, over the years, if you would have saw our kitchen, let's say 12, 14 years ago, it's kind of sad now to see it today. We used to have a lot of crafts, a lot of chafing dishes, a lot of coffee pots. We had a lot of equipment, a lot of dishes, a lot of glassware. Almost all that's gone. It's either been stolen, broke, or we don't know where it is. So, I mean, there are a lot of caterers who show up who aren't familiar with Kemper, even though they get to walk through it first and see everything. They come in and they go, oh my God, what am I going to use? Well, Vicki has more or less brought a lot of her equipment, and there is a locked closet in off the kitchen that has all of her, a lot of her equipment in it. Now, can anybody just go in that closet and use that equipment? No. We could never allow that because that would be insanity. But let's say you own a catering company and you're from Chicago and you just showed up and you didn't have any coffee pots. And they said, well, I just assumed you'd have coffee pots here. You could go to Cindy, our food and banquet manager, and say, hey, I need help. She has the key. She'll open that closet door and lend you whatever you want, but she'll keep track of everything that's leaving that room, and it also has to be put back. So she's done a lot of things that way. Then also, Vicki, which I talked about earlier, eight signature events. Two of them were totally Vicki's idea, our Friday fish fry and the Mother's Day brunch. Now, I'm sure a lot of you know Vicki used to own restaurants, and unfortunately both of them burned down. And she used to have a huge Mother's Day brunch. She brought the idea to, I think, Gary Valancourt a couple years ago and said, you know, that this is something I used to do. I think we can turn, you know, 200 people. Turn them over on Mother's Day. We tried it last year with only one sitting. We packed the place. We regretted only booking one sitting. This past year we did two sittings. We packed the place. Next year we're going to do three sittings. It's a great idea. If somebody wants to bring a good idea to Kemper that's going to help Kemper and is also going to help their business, we're all ears. We're there. We got to make the money. We have to raise the money. We got to pay We Energies. And we're open to those events. Another big signature event, I'm sure some of you have been there, Christmas at Kemper. The Saturday before it opens to the public, we have the opening night gala, which is at the Anderson Arts Center. That's open to the public. It's a $25 ticket, but once you come in, it's open bar, it's all the food you can eat, it's all open for whatever you want. If you're a sponsor, you get free tickets, pay at the door $25. If you come in, there'll be four people walking around with appetizers, hors d'oeuvre trays. Four people, and we always have two or three in the kitchen working. Vicki has a budget of $1,500 to serve 500 people. That's $3 a person. Now, do you think she's making money at that event? No, she's not. Is she making money at the Twilight Jazz event when she's selling food at the rate she's selling food at? No, she's not. She has a love for Kemper like a lot of us do. I mean, I'm a volunteer. I've never made dime one off of Kemper. In fact, my office, Design Partners, which is a marketing firm, donates everything that Kemper does. all the brochures, from marketing to Twilight Jazz, the business cards to stationery. I treat Kemper like it's a client. I treat Kemper like any other one of my clients. In fact, you know, the kind of marketing firm I own, I have 46 employees. I have clients like Kraft, Nestle's, MillerCoors. I manage the Line and Google brand. I've done it for 22 years. InSinkErator, Dremel, U.S. Foods, Driscoll's. So I manage some pretty big companies. So when it comes to marketing, I'd like to think I know a little bit about what I'm doing, a lot more than other aspects of other businesses. But the one thing that I do want to hang my hat on, that was my idea, and I'm very proud of it, is this piece right here, where you can get married to Kemper for $7,995. This is a great tool. We have many phone calls. Many people have come in. Our phones are ringing. Now, I think we've only had one person out of all the people that have come in and said, I want this package. I'm not changing it. We've had a lot of people come in and say, you know, I really don't want 125 photos. I'd rather have 300 photos. Fine. We have that price structure. Hey, I don't want two meats on a buffet. I want a sit-down chicken dinner. Fine. You can do that. Or I don't want this caterer. I want this caterer. Or I don't want this florist. I want that florist. You can do anything you want to do to this package. But it's not going to stay at $79.95. Now, we had a food and banquet manager who no longer works with us, who left last December, accused me of baiting and switching. I said, trust me. I know baiting and switching. I'm in marketing. This is what I do for a living. My job is to get the phone to ring. And the phone has rang. We've had a lot of great results from this. And everybody who's looked at it thinks it's a great idea. Can it be approved upon? I'm sure it can be, and it will be the next time we introduce it. But I think it's a great marketing tool. We have to do whatever we can, because the one thing I have just found out, more so recently than before, the catering business is a very competitive business. I thought marketing was competitive. I mean, I have clients, the clients I have, you can imagine, there's people knocking on their doors every single day from New York, from LA to Chicago, saying, these are Jamokes from Racine, Wisconsin. Why are you with them? I have to prove every day of the week why I still earn their business, and I do. And that's the way I feel. Anybody at Kemper should work the exact same way. I mean, I'm sure some of you own your own businesses. I don't call vendors. That's a word I don't like. I call them partners. In fact, design partners is because I call my clients my partners. I invite you to go onto our webpage. It'll explain that whole philosophy. And they're our partners. They're in it as much as we are to make Kemper succeed and to make Kemper grow. And all because you stand on a soapbox and scream louder than anybody else that I deserve more business than anybody else, I'm sorry. If I did that to my clients, I would be in trouble. But I mean, I welcome, it boggles my mind that somebody has not come to us with the idea of a bridal fair. I mean, I think it's a great, it would be a great location. Have two mock weddings, maybe one at 10 in the morning, one at 2 in the afternoon. Have only one caterer there if you want, only one floor. So, and I think all these people should get together, team up, and have a Saturday and have a great event there. We're not against it. But someone come to us with that idea. Because Kemper probably will not put it together because we have a lot of other things going on right now. And we expect our partners to help us bring those ideas to the forefront. So I've kind of gone through some of this. I want to continue the list. Menus are kept on site for the three caterers. A client wishes to see the options and different food selections. All recommendations to other caterers, all recommended, and other caterers pay a $500 service fee for our kitchen, which is non-refundable. That service fee, like all of these rental fees, are negotiable. Cindy has been given the power to say, hey, okay, you know, I want to have a wedding here, but I can't afford $4,000 for the Anderson Art Center. She has the power to negotiate that price. Same way she has the power to negotiate the price of a $500 service fee for our kitchen. Why? Okay, a good example. Actually, one of our board members, Pat Mott, brought this to our attention. She says, let's play pretend. Let's say I'm having a party there for only 30 people. Actually, the alumni was going to have a luncheon there for 30 people. And she says, if you have a caterer charge us $500, that's going to be insane. And we agree with you. And that's why Cindy has the power to negotiate that kitchen price, whatever she feels it needs to be. Now, if you're coming in with 150 people, if you're going to have a filet dinner, baked potato, salad, you're going to mess up our kitchen. You're going to get a kitchen fee. But if you're coming in for a salad for lunch, one of our biggest caterers right now there is Southport Pantry. They're our number one caterer. They have more events there than anybody. Because if any of you are in a service organization like the Rotary or Kiwanis who meet at Kemper, that's who they are using. And they've made that niche market for them. And it's a great market. And they partnered with us. We make money off of it. They make money off of it. It's a great, great solution. Our preferred caterer has to charge $5 per plate. Vicki has to charge, puts an upcharge on her meal of $5 per plate. Everybody else only has to put an upcharge of $2.50 per plate. All clients get charged a 19% service fee. We've done that for a long time. That's for incidentals, for linen, for anything else that may come along. We have given Cindy Gruby, the hospitality manager, freedom to work with our clients and try to make sure we're not losing business to Strawberry Creek, Kenosha Country Club, or Circa on 7th, as they have a distinct advantage over us being that they have in-house catering. Thus, we can get creative when it comes to room rates if they're renting multiple rooms or have a larger event. Let's go back and play pretend. Let's say you're getting married again, and you're going to have a wedding in the chapel. Then you have your pictures taken in the Durkee Mansion, which we now allow, and you want to have the conference center. You're going to have 150 people there. I can tell you right now, we'll probably charge you close to nothing for the chapel. We'll give you a deal. Because we do not want to lose your business when it comes to the food and hospitality end of it. Because, I mean, it's no secret. I'm sure you saw the article in the paper that the state of Wisconsin has passed a law that there's no longer carry-on to an establishment that has a liquor license. Well, at Twilight Jazz, we now have enforced that, and one of our main sources of revenue is the bar business, is an open bar at a wedding. That's a great revenue source. If you look at this brochure, if you look at the fine print under the asterisk for $7,995, it says all beverages, alcoholic and non-alcoholic, and gratuities are not included. So we hope those 150 people drink a lot. So then we encourage any caterer, we don't care who they are, to come to Kemper. And if they want to come to Kemper with a client in hand, let's play pretend. You're my client, I'm a caterer. You and I are going to go to Kemper. We're going to talk to Gary and Cindy. You can sit right along with us. We can negotiate the deal and make it all happen right in front of everybody. It's all transparent. We will do whatever it takes to win the sale, because I'm telling you right now, our competition is only growing. And we want to keep that aspect of our business intact. And it is. And right now, it is growing. I kind of rambled a little bit and wandered a little bit. Does anybody have any questions before I move on? Yeah.
Gary, I have one initially, and that would be, I know the answer to this, but I want everybody to hear it. Your preferred caterer pays $5 per plate, and the recommended caterer is paid $2.50. Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Because she doesn't have to pay our kitchen fee. Trust me, she said more than once to me she'd rather pay the kitchen fee. Because if she has a large event down there, she's paying more to us than the ones that are paying a kitchen fee. You don't have to do the math. I wish Saturday we had a wedding. Sorry.
Nope. Don't know. Everything's going to come through me here.
Okay. Saturday we had an event there. Now, if any of you have ever been in the Simmons Auditorium, it's an interesting room. It has a lot of Gothic paintings all around it. And the bride and groom hired a linen company out of Waukegan. And I was sent some pictures today. I meant to print them out and bring them here. But we're going to now contact this linen company. We're going to have them involved at Kemper, because what they did there was so spectacular. Transformed that room from this Gothic, old-looking girls' school into a wedding hall. They did a spectacular job. And we're looking for people like that who will be great partners with us. And it was a great, great event.
So, Supervisor Bostrom, you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for asking that question, because that was exactly where I was going. I wanted to know what that was about. So thank you for asking that. What does the preferred caterer get
other
for being the preferred caterer?
The only thing, well, really, the only thing she gets is this. This is our print material. It was done over, it's been done over 2 years ago. My office did all of this. In this piece, wedding and receptions, it will say in here, our professional event staff and our first-class catering service with Vicky Victoria's being our in-house preferred caterer will serve, that's it.
Okay, so she gets significantly more advertising than the recommended.
I wouldn't call that significantly more.
Well, on your pre-printed brochures.
But don't forget, people get this after they've come to Kemper and have met with our food and banquet manager, where they've already been told they have three.
So she's paying for that preferred status. You know, not just out of the kindness of her heart, she's doing all these wonderful things. She's paying for that service.
Well, no, I think part of it is, I mean, why am I doing all this wonderful service? It's out of the kindness of my heart. I'm not making any money off of this. I've never made dime one off of Kemper. And there are a lot of the entire Kemper board. You could go around the Kemper board. I mean, we have a lot of people on that board, like Chuck DeKalb and Jeff Hansen. You know, there are people in business who donate their businesses to Kemper. Mm-hmm. That's how we get a lot of stuff done at Kemper.
And my boss happens to be one of, or was, Mark Bork at Berkshire Hathaway.
He's still, as you can see. He is still on the Kemper board.
Thank you for answering that. So that explains why she has a significantly higher upcharge. You mentioned that she would prefer to pay the same rate as others do, but then I would assume she would lose this preferred status and not be on your...
If she did that, she would probably lock her closet. And I don't want that closet locked. Cindy doesn't want that closet locked. Cindy wants a key to that closet. We want to be able to have access to a lot of her equipment. Now, can we strike a different deal with her? I'm open to talking to anybody. But, I mean, right now, being that we have been so stripped of so much of our equipment and all of our assets over the years, and we're just not going to keep buying dishes. We're not. The one thing we're actually, you have to keep in mind how it works. Jeff, Scott Carney, who's chair of the marketing committee, they've already discussed the fact, which I don't have a problem with, but I can imagine what some people would say, that the caterer, whoever it is, has to bring everything in themselves. Dishes, glasses, silverware, everything. We're going to be out of the flatware business. We're going to be out of the dishes business. We're going to be out of the coffee pot business. We're going to rent the kitchen, the stoves, the refrigeration units, the buildings. That's it. And the caterer will be liable for everything else. That, I'm not saying we're doing that. That has been discussed. And, I mean, we're thinking, what are the positives and negatives to that? I can think of negatives, and I can think of positives. So.
Yeah, I want to get into your business and how that gets handled. I mean, that's up for you to decide. I mean, I can see a world of problems with having several different caterers and several different things. And it takes away from your brand, and you want to have the same brand. I'm also in marketing as well.
Brand is important.
So out of all of the events that you had last year, let's just say it's 100. I'm sure it was more, but let's just say it was 100. What would you say the breakdown is between your preferred caterer doing the catering, your recommended caterers, and everybody else?
Actually, if you go in reverse, over the last, we did that for the county executive, and the caterer that was there the most was Sophisticated. Catering that came in second was Twisted. Catering that came in third was Victoria. The catering, again, that won the most business of anybody was Southport Pantry. So you got to say, you have to class the kind of event.
Sure.
So I'm sure you're talking about a signature event.
Yeah, like compare apples to apples.
Right. I mean, I don't know those numbers off the top of my head. I put that sheet together for the county executive. But, I mean, right now it changes. I mean, it could change. Well, actually, who was one of our most popular caterers is a caterer you people use. Don't forget, you come to Kemper every year. Actually, I want to make a note of something. We don't ever give away the facility to anybody. Nobody can come into Kemper and use it free of charge, except for one group of people, and I'm sitting with them. The county board and the county can use the Kemper Center facilities. We do not charge them, ever. For room charges, for your Christmas party, for the county executive's Christmas, now you pay the caterer. You pay for if you have a liquor bill, if you're the bar, but we don't charge your room charge or anything. But the one caterer that has been being used the most all of a sudden is Chef David. He has come out of the woodwork. He is being used a lot. And if I'm not mistaken, he's the caterer that you people use for your Christmas party, is Chef David. He's doing a great job. We had a huge wedding.
Friday
at the Anderson Arts Center. Chef David did it. And we got nothing but compliments on it. Nothing but compliments.
So I used Chef David, and the county we have used him at Christmas party.
Mm-hmm. He's a great caterer.
He complained through the whole process about Pepper Center. But it was, you know, he enjoys doing it.
Oh.
It was very similar to what I've heard from these folks. But he continues to do it. He knows the rules. And
you know, it's tough because, again, we have a lot of different people moving in and out of that kitchen every week. I mean, sometimes we have 3-4 events in a week. We have 3-4 different caterers in and out of that kitchen. And we have to somehow manage that. And we have a very small staff. Our operations person has been on sick leave since April. She had a heart attack and open heart surgery, and she's still not back. So we're working at a very small staff at Kemper. So we're always trying to think of ways to work better and to make us more efficient. I'm sure you're looking at the clock. I don't want to take any more of your time.
Oh, no. I'm going to ask Supervisor if there's any.
I'm done. Thank
we
you.
We do want to get on to our agenda here, so
thank you.
And if we don't repeat questions, Supervisor Brady.
Thank you for your presentation. I think it illuminated a lot of things around supervisors' minds. But just to touch on a few things, how long has our current hospitality manager, Cindy Ruby, been on the job?
She's been on the job since third week of December. Mm-hmm. Third week of December.
6-7 months.
Mm-hmm. And we see an increase in business.
The way this is structured in terms of any vendor performing at the Kemper Center, is that a decision that is made by your hospitality manager, or is that made between the person who's paying for the event and the caterer? Who holds the ultimate decision-making power?
In terms of, I'm not sure if I totally understand the question, who the caterer is? Or
yes.
That's totally up to the client. They can bring in anybody they want as long as they have a license and they are insured. Anybody. Right now, we don't bar anybody.
So then I'll ask this question. Have there been any denials to caterers in the past 2 years where a caterer wanted to use a facility and they couldn't use it for
No,
some period?
No, absolutely not. Actually, Gary just handed me a note. He's like, I find this amazing. I shouldn't. You have to keep in mind, a lot of events at Kemper are very quick events. A lot of weddings are very quick. We've already had people call us on Tuesday and want to have a wedding there on Saturday. That's not unheard of at Kemper Center. Actually, the caterer that has been now called at Kemper a few times as a major caterer for weddings is Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they're a licensed caterer. I mean, we're not going to say no to them. That's what our client wants. And if that's what their budget can only afford, why would I deny somebody the right to come in and use Kemper, which is a jewel on Lake Michigan, because they can only afford somebody lesser than what somebody else may hire?
Anything else, Supervisor Brady?
Yeah, just one further question. So basically, I think this question's been answered. I just want to hear it plain and simple. The parties sitting here, the Flynn's, who operate Sophisticated, have they been doing business and operating at the Kemper Center this calendar year in 2016?
Yes, they have.
No, they haven't.
You haven't had any
this year?
Not this year. I can't answer that question, but I'll be perfectly honest with you. We had close to no business the first quarter of this year. Now, if I was you, I would ask me, why was that? And I would say you'd have to ask our former hospitality manager, who's no longer with us. Now, some of these questions... Yes, I'm sorry.
May I
ask? Well,
I'm sorry. Supervisor Brady's done. Yeah. Are you done? Supervisor Gilmore.
Okay, so you're saying any caterer can come in. Do you have a type of contract with Kentucky Fried Chicken or these caterers that come in? How do you...
We have no contracts with anybody right now.
You have no legally binding
contracts? No legally binding contracts with anybody right now. None. Nobody. There is not one anywhere.
How do you guarantee payment and all of those things?
They have to pay with that day of. We get a check. Well, I mean, it's okay. Like any business. I mean, you have to have some honesty. I mean, you have some goodwill. But you know, that's a very good question. Because why that's a very good question is that, okay, now let's play pretend. That caterer, from Chicago is coming up in September. Now, my greatest fear and Cindy's greatest fear is that's a big event. It's going to be a big wedding. They're going to come in here and trash our kitchen and leave and probably know they'll maybe never come back again. Well, Cindy now has a much better policing policy, and if you ever met Cindy, she's the kind of person that will let you know you're doing something wrong, and she will get in your face. And, you know, and we often, and we also have the bride and groom have a security deposit, do we not, to rent the room. And they can forfeit that security deposit if they bring us somebody that's not in the best interest of Kemper Center. That's really the only time when we really run into trouble. 99% of the caterers who come to Kemper have been there before. They want to come back, and then we want them to come back. But every now and then, we will get somebody totally new. But I welcome them, and I hope they come with a great idea to come up with a ninth signature event that we can have.
May I continue?
Yes.
How do you answer for caterers that claim they do have a contract with you?
Show it to me.
Show you the contract?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I have one other thing is, how are you guys being paid? Are you being paid directly by the wedding party, or are you being paid by
both?
The, okay.
And how that works is this. If we go back to this sheet, whatever the caterer, for example, let's play pretend, because it's an easier number for me to add, $5. Let's play pretend, and let's say it's Vicki. And let's say she has 100 people there. She's going to have to give us a check that night of the event, for $500 for the $5 fee. She will then submit us a bill for her catering event. We will pay Vicki. The bride and groom pays us.
Okay. So my concern is, if you have these no contracts, but there's vendors in Kenosha County or partners in Kenosha County that believe that they have a contract with you, how do we resolve that
This is how we're going to resolve it. I'll hand this out. I don't know. I won't keep my copy because I have the original. I was given something. A letter came registered mail to me Friday from the Flynns to Kemper Center, along with it's copied. Who else is copied on there? The Corporation Council, a few other people. There are four or five different issues that they want resolved. Gary Valancourt and I spent a good part of the day today with John O'Connor. We've retained John O'Connor. He's our attorney now. He will be answering all of these questions that they have, and we will be getting back to them very quickly.
So they'll be able to answer questions for us as well? Or
who will be able to answer questions?
John O'Connor.
Sure. In fact, you know what? If you would like his answer sent to you too, you know what? I don't have a problem with this.
Okay.
Is it okay if I send that answer to everybody in the county board? We're very transparent. You can come look at anything you want, any day of the week.
That'd be lovely.
I'm very transparent.
One last thing before, my biggest concern is the relationship that this building and this 501c3 has with the members of Kenosha County. And so that's why I brought that up. It's also been brought across my desk that vendors or partners had not been being paid. And that's why I asked that question in regards to how the payment process works.
The payment process works, you're going to laugh and you'll probably guess this. The payment process to our vendors work much quicker, let's say April or May through November. You're probably paid within 30 days, if not sooner. Now come December through March or April, depending how cold it is outside and depending how many events we have, and depending on how much we want to go to the well, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, we have a fairly large fund in the Kenosha Community Fund, which is Kemper Center's funds. We can go to that well whenever we want. Though that's money that's been donated to us. It's money that's pennies put there. Donna Wolf Steigerwald, before she passed away, put money there. It's all monies there that are our umbrella money. I want to say, though, and I'm not saying this because he's sitting behind me, Gary Valancourt is the very first president in the history of Kemper Center. For the year and a half he's been there, has never gone to the well once to pay a bill. Not once. We are maintaining Kemper today on a total cash flow cycle. That has never happened. Well, it has happened before, but it's right now happening, and it's a great thing. So we're not, we're working in the plus right now. And especially with all the bookings we have in the future, it's exciting. It's an exciting place to be at.
May I ask how you're in the plus if you haven't had any events the first quarter of the year?
Gary's very frugal. He's very conservative. We've been lucky. He had a fund drive, a membership drive. We're about to launch a very large membership drive for the Anderson Arts Center. Again, on August 30th, we're going to be handing out a brochure on the 40th anniversary of Kemper Center. In that brochure, you can just guess what's going to be in there, a pledge card asking you, hey, while you're here, you want to write out a check for $25 and become a member of Kemper Center? We're doing that better. Gary's doing much better at that than our previous president. I mean, do we make mistakes? Sure we make mistakes. We've been there 40 years and the place has grown. It's grown to, I think, beyond Penny's wildest dreams. And, you know, I think we have a great partnership with Kenosha County. I think the county executive is a great partner. I welcome anybody to come down there anytime. I'll take you places that I may never even see. But you're welcome to see anything we have down there.
Okay, I would take you up on that. I'd like to see the fourth floor.
You'll see why there's a book about haunted places in Kenosha, and we're on the cover. I mean, it is kind of spooky when you go up there, but it is kind of designed. It's an old girls' school from the 1860s. You know, it's neat. And to clarify something, I'm glad you mentioned this, the third and fourth floor above the conference center. Someone had brought up that the third and fourth floor above Simmons Gymnasium was not restored. That's because the third and fourth floor above the Simmons, above the conference center was restored, and that was because of the recommendation of Mark Molinaro, who was the architect at the time, who was also county board supervisor at the time, who oversaw the project, who oversaw that entire project. We didn't have anything to do with it except for raising $1.5 million, which we did. We paid $500,000 in three payments back to the county on time. We didn't handle any of the bidding, any of the contracting, any of the paying the bills. Fred Patchy was here at the time. He handled it along with his staff.
Okay, I did have a question in regards to that $1 million loan, but you just clarified it.
Yeah.
There was a renovation. It just wasn't.
It really wasn't a loan. It started off, I hate to take a lot of your time. I'll do this real quickly. The Kiwanis had an event there, and they used what is now our premier kitchen. But at that time, that kitchen had never been restored. It was still the kitchen of Kemper Hall. We didn't even have a working dishwasher in there. Art Buchanan was there with a lot of his Rotarians and Kiwanians and said, you know, we got to buy these people a dishwasher so at least they can wash dishes. They sat down there that night, got on the phone, and said, I bet we could raise enough money to totally restore this kitchen. They called Penny. Penny got involved. Penny called me. I met her at Art Buchanan's barbershop. She called Clarence Griffin. She says, I'm willing to pledge right now at that point it was $1.2 million. I'm willing to pledge that if we can get the county to become a partner. We went to John Collins. John Collins says, if you can raise $1.2 million, I'll assume it's bonding. I'm not sure how you people raise money. I'm not in county government. But he says, we will match whatever you can raise. 1.2. Got the architects involved. You know what happens when architects get involved. They said 1.2 each won't do it. It has to go to 3 million. You got to go to 1.5 each. We said, fine, we'll come up with 1.5 if you come up with 1.5. And we did. We raised 1.5 million, paid it back at $500,000 a crack on time. That's how that whole project happened. Actually, it was the county because, again, anybody who's been involved in county government for a long time, it was talked about, I'm sure it died for whatever reason, that the third and fourth floor above the conference center would be county offices. That's why that money was put above that. We put above there because we have a working elevator that occupies that wing of Kemper Center.
It's working now?
It's working. Well, is it? Yeah, hit by lightning. And that's another great partner of you people, is that you stepped up to the plate and you found out it was insured under your insurance policy. So it is being fixed.
Okay, any other questions on the catering? Anything? The history of all this, a couple of us have lived in it. The remodeling and things that were done, they were done to the necessary rooms that are being used today. there's numerous more remodeling you could do there if you wanted to throw $15 million at it, but you know, that's a whole other story. So with that, I'm going to thank Gary for being here. I mean, these were the specific questions that I wanted to answer this evening. People have done it. And Gary, I know this is a place, you know, that holds a big place in your heart. And we thank all of you for being here from Kemper.
Well, I want to thank all of you, too. And, you know, I'm a very lucky person. I was born and I'm raised and I lived in Kenosha my entire life. And I've also been lucky because I'm lucky enough to open a business where I now have 48 employees, design partners, and it's very successful. And I'm a big believer that if you become successful in the community, it's your responsibility to put something back into that community. And I've sat on practically every board in the city of Kenosha and the county of Kenosha. Right now, I'm only down to two. I'm only on Parksides and Kemper's. And I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to say that Parkside, for the third year in a row, their largest fundraiser this year is going to be held at Kemper Center. It's not going to be on the Parkside grounds. They chose the Anderson Arts Center again because they think it's such a premier location to have a fundraiser. So I'm happy to hear that.
Well, thank you again, Gary. And see you at Christmas, hopefully.
Well, I hope to see you on August 30th at our celebration of the 40th.
We're going to move on to division reports. Matt, you're up first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first thing you have in front of you is a resolution to apply for Bay Lake Regional Planning Commission for funding Emerald Ash Borer reforestation efforts for Petrifying Springs Park. So, as we've done previously, anytime that we apply for a grant, specifically, this is attached to the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, we have to do a formal resolution in order to potentially receive those funds. So this is $20,000 through this grant, and we would the county would put in $5,000 for our staff efforts for the actual replanting of these trees from our reforestation efforts.
So, would you like this evening?
Yes, sir.
Did I get a motion on that?
Motion to approve as presented.
Second. Well, we have a resolution. The resolution?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a second.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Bach. Come on, move it. All those in favor, you as governor?
Aye.
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 Committee?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So you have an original to pass around?
Just a 1 point discussion on this. So I read the third whereas $5,000 in kind contributions to labor, there's no actual cash outlay expected by Kenosha County Center.
No, that would be completely with staff cost built into our operation.
That was my understanding. Thank you.
Go ahead, Nick.
Okay, so moving on. I attached a bunch of pictures. We had an excellent month of June, numerous wonderful events throughout our park system. So just enjoy them. You'll see all the events that we had. So every weekend was jam-packed full of activities at numerous parks. Even this last weekend, we had hosted a Make-A-Wish car show. We had 105 cars, busiest it's ever been. Last year, they raised $5,000. 100% of the proceeds went back to local Make-A-Wish for Racine and Kenosha. No money is used anywhere else. This year, we exceeded that by $2,000, so we had $7,000 in donations. So huge supporters of the parks, huge supporters of Make-A-Wish and all these events. So just enjoy those pictures that we attached. As far as the status report, Emerald Ash Borer removal, we finished stump grinding with 547 stumps at Petrifying Springs Park and Fox River Park. So that is completely done. The actual landscaping is finished over at Pets, so we basically landscaped, put the dirt in, overseed it, and we're currently working on Fox River Park. So we're moving forward with our summer youth employment program with that. So cleanup efforts, we're working on a lot of tree line areas, stump grinding, as I said, and we just anticipate that this is going to be a continued effort throughout the remainder of the summer and fall. Kemper Center, as I stated last month, Baird Marine Specialist has started to review and collect data. and the report should be completed by the end of this month, so I'll have something to share for the next committee meeting. As far as Pike River Bank stabilization, Applied Ecological Services is still conducting surveys and data collection, and again, we hope to have conceptual information for the committee by mid-July to August. As far as KD Park Phase 1, we are moving forward with this project. We opened the bids on June 28th, and AW Oaks was awarded that bid. We just did that today. And we are going to be closing the park, the main park off of KD, on August 1st, and that's when the construction is anticipated to start.
And Matt, could you tell us those bids? I think it was well below.
It was. AW Oaks came at, they were the lowest at $335,085. Would you like to know any of the other?
No, I just want the committee to know where our estimates of what we had.
Correct. So it did come in well below what our anticipation was. So with that, we basically are able to utilize some of that funding from the grant in order to move it towards paving, which was already anticipated to be happening this fall.
So what was it, like 580?
It was 525,000 that we budgeted for this project. Half of that was through the state stewardship grant. And so with that full balance, we're able to shift some of that extra surplus, per se, of about $130,000 towards paving for the county highway crews. So it's all positive and great news for that project. Petrifying Springs Park, we had a contractor move into the park to clean and televise over about 5,400 lineal feet of sanitary sewer. Our main focus was to try to or to televise that, just to see what we were dealing with as far as the sanitary sewer. It's an old system. It's about 90 years old or so. So we just want to make sure that we're on the up and up to have that cleaned and televised, so we can have a final report done to see if there's anything that needs to be done for this next budgetary season.
Supervisor Boston, we have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, backtracking to the KD part.
Sure.
You were going to offer the other bids, and I'm just kind of curious to see who they were and how much they were for.
Let me see if I can pull that out for you. AW Oaks and Son came out at $335,085.50. Wilkman came out as $341,716.97. CW, you may, maybe you know this. Propero, thank you, was $376,652. And DK Contractors was
$426,596. And the, you know, so everybody knows why I'm asking this, I'm not just being a jerk. Coming from the city and sitting on the Public Works Committee there, I was always interested to see, of the projects that we put out, how many people were actually bidding and how competitive we were. And in many cases, I'd seen the lowest bidder. In this particular case, between the lowest bidder and the highest bidder, it was a difference of, you know, 20% or so. And in many other cases, it can be much greater. And I always would ask the question, what's the big discrepancy? Why were, you know, we off, or did we do something that led a contractor to, you know, bid higher than typical? So that's what I'm asking. So thank you for the indulgence.
So next on the report is Fox River Park. As I stated last time, we have completed a majority of the paving through the highway crews. The remainder of what needs to be paved, hopefully this week, is Fox River lot, the boat launch, and the service shop. That's all that remained for the paving. That'll be completely done. Fox River Water Trail is now officially open. We've been getting a lot of phone calls and positive reviews, a lot of people utilizing those spots to access to launch their kayaks, canoes, and other non-motorized watercraft. So that was a huge success. Our summer youth employment program is well in swing and almost halfway over, surprisingly enough, with summer. But it started on June 20th, and they're clearing brush over at Fox River, filling stumps, playground work, trail maintenance, all that good stuff. So they're hard at work, and they're doing a fantastic job this season. Attached is a Pringle Nature Center report that you guys can review if anyone has any questions for that, or else it's a pretty big and lengthy report. And the last thing I have and you guys should have an attachment, is the football feasibility report. Several months ago, Supervisor Grady approached the committee to look at the feasibility of foot golf within Kenosha County, just to make sure that we're innovative and on the forefront of any of these ideas. So we were able to show a pretty cool video about what foot golf is, and we basically wanted to study the feasibility and report back to the committee on what we found with that. So with this feasibility report, we basically contacted numerous organizations, people that are on a regional, local, and even a national level that have done foot golf within their communities. And the kind of the purpose is if and how foot golf might fit within the portfolio of Kenosha County, and if this might be a sport that community residents would actually be interested in pursuing and utilizing within the region. So I'm sure some people are kind of questioning what foot golf is if you're new to the committee. So kind of in a nutshell, it is golf and soccer put together. So it combines both sports, and it utilizes a golf course, but it's more suitable for soccer players to come and enjoy it in a different retrospect. So you utilize the same golf course kind of in parallel to golfers. You can set up your own tee time, and you can alternate between golfers and foot golfers, utilizing those, not the same holes, but off to the side. So you'd have a separate larger hole, as you can see in the picture, that would fit an actual soccer ball in. So kind of a creative idea. So we went out to kind of ask some communities a bunch of questions. So what did we find? Typically, there is an accreditation process for foot golf through the American Foot Golf League. So it is kind of, like I said, co-created on a regular golf course. And in order to be accredited through this agency, it typically offers kits that you can utilize to set up your own foot golf course onto a golf course for about $5,000. And then they have an annual membership for marketing fees and everything else that goes into their website and promotions for an annual fee of $600. So typically, right around now, we have 16 AFGL accredited foot golf courses within Wisconsin. So then we went on to see what regional people are doing within more of the state of Wisconsin. And we reached out to Milwaukee County, and Milwaukee County Parks has four foot golf courses. Three of them are more of their pitch and putt style, where it's par three. They're not very long holes for their regular golf courses, and they typically don't get a lot of traffic, to be honest. It's smaller scale. It's more for your beginner golfers, your youth. So they wanted to try to grow and expand people utilizing those golf courses with something new. They do have one, a Lincoln golf course, that's a little bit more. It's only nine holes, but it's longer holes. So that's the only one that they have 18 holes of foot golf at. The big takeaway from that was the revenue generated was only $16,000 in 2015. So I was kind of surprised to hear that it didn't have as much revenue as anticipated with all those golf courses. All four of them combined only made $16,000, and that's not without that's not including any marketing expenses. Then we reached out to Washington County Foot Golf Course, and they took a different dynamic on foot golf because, like I said earlier, in order to be accredited, you have to be on a golf course. For Washington County, they didn't really care too much about their accreditation. They just wanted to provide a free amenity for the public, but they were not able to associate that with their golf courses. So they actually just created a nine-hole foot golf course to coexist with their soccer fields at Heritage Trails Park, located in the village of Slinger. So it kind of takes the concept of disc golf or foot golf or soccer, and this creates a free amenity onto the general public. And they're not really in the business of the accreditation process of that. So it became extremely popular. They have everything set up as they typically would with the course style. There's no fee for it, it's just open to the general public, first come, first serve. And like I say, it's not accredited, but it's becoming pretty successful for the organization. So we reached out nationally to different districts, Chicago area, Midwest, NRPA, the National Park and Rec Association. And a few key points is it doesn't appear that foot golf generates appreciable revenue for those venues that charge a fee. and that it's more of a curiosity element than anything else as of now because it's so up and coming. So we contacted local support to see what it would be, if there is any feasibility with any local organizations, specifically soccer, YMCA, and the Western Kenosha County Recreation actually sent out an email that we generated to see what interest was involved with foot golf, and it went out to 100 families and coaches, and we really didn't get too much back as far as interest, more curiosity than anything else when we sent that out. So, in closing, the recommendations that, that the division came up with is Petrifying Springs Course and Brightondale Links are two premier golf courses within Kenosha County. The golf division surpassed $3 million in revenue and recorded 95,000 rounds in 2015. It's recommended to not interfere with Kenosha County's golf course operations since foot golf does not appear to be a financially lucrative amenity. Foot golf appears to be a potentially marketable sport that may engage in local soccer players and folks interested in non-traditional outdoor recreation. It's recommended that we continue the discussions with local soccer clubs to determine if there is a base of interest for a foot golf venue within the Kenosha County Park System. And Kenosha County Parks offers numerous locations where foot golf could be an added free amenity to the general public that would coexist with other recreational attractions. The Parks Division will continue to work with local potential stakeholders to identify areas that may best fit with foot golf venue. And that's all I have for my report.
Ray, are you with some?
I was going to add just a brief note for the new members on the committee when it's not related to foot golf. It's the Summer Youth Employment Program. For folks that aren't familiar, that actually works specifically with youth that are identified at risk. The gang prevention coordinator from Human Services worked closely with the Parks Department the last few years to put this program in place. And the first year that it was put in place, there was, again, there's all kinds of variables that could be measured to determine what, but the only significant thing that changed that summer was the fact that we put this program in place. And I can't remember how many kids participated the first year, but it was, I want to say it was somewhere between 75 and 100. And youth crime that summer went down by like over 50%. And it has remained low ever since we've had this program in place. So I just wanted to bring that up because it's kind of an interesting piece of information. That was it.
In the summer, because we've got them.
Right. Right, because we've got
they're at the park.
Right, they're at the park.
Bill.
Thank you for that report. Very comprehensive, very well researched.
Thank you.
I'm sure, Dan, you breathed a big sigh of relief when you thought up the white birch would not be converted over to foot golf.
Yes, I am. After seeing that video.
And again, much of what we suspected, it's a bread and butter business here in Kenosha, providing golf. And if we were located, it would probably be some auxiliary non-golf course sort of thing. Kind of what we suspected. But again, thank you for the diligence, and we'll see where it develops.
Okay, we'll move on to Dana.
In golf operations, we've been following our business 2016 business plan. We're sending out email blasts every week to over 20,000 people. I'm hoping that all of you get it. Do you get it twice, can I ask? You get it twice?
I get it once.
Just once, okay. Because I do the county board and then all county employees also, so that's good to hear.
City employees get it too.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. The more the merrier. Bring them on. Our next big initiative is the Kenosha County Open. That'll be July 22nd through the 24th. 3 days of competitive golf at Brightondale, Petrifying Springs, and then bike back to Brightondale. It's less than $100 for the golfers of the county, so there really isn't any county restriction. Anybody can actually play because it is a county open. The ladies open is this weekend. We will be hosting the first leg of that at Brightondale on Saturday, and then it'll be moving to Twin Lakes on Sunday. And today started the Kenosha County Junior Open, and we had 25 participants in that, so that's going to be a four-day event. So that's a lot of fun for the juniors. Our junior clinics are just bubbling over. I mean, it's great to see. We do about 40 kids at Brightondale Wednesday mornings from 9 to 1. We do 40 at Petrifying Springs Wednesday evenings, and then another 40 or so on Thursday evenings. And we also did an after-school program earlier in the spring. So, you know, it's really going great. I mean, we've gone through 4 weeks of it already. Really see improvements in the kids, as far as the ones that really want to play better are playing better. I do it. I teach along with our head professional, Doug Cholsky, and our golf shop manager, Andy Otis, over at Petrifying Springs. And it's going great. The traveling league, the junior PGA league, is going also well. Last year, we were able to split to have both courses having a junior league team, and this year, again, we have full fields at both golf courses, which is 12 kids on a team, and we've won the junior league championship 3 straight years at Brightondale. It looks like that might happen again. It's looking very good for that. 2 years ago, we went and we won the state championship, and then we went to Cog Hill down in Illinois, and unfortunately we lost by 1/2 a flag down there. So, but that's going really well. Caddy and Leadership Academy is going great at Petrifying Springs. A lot of positive images coming out of it. I mean, the kids are really learning the game. They're learning from the people that are taking the caddies, and you know, Petrifying Springs is having a very positive effect for it too. I mean, it shows that we're caring about the youth of our area, and we're trying to mentor these young people to become, you know, golfers in the future, and also just to learn. They go through leadership and training, and they have to do community service. So it's really, we had a colonel, actually a retired colonel today, that was in charge of 4,000 men at one time, that came and did the leadership training today for them. You know, so it's really exciting to see how these guys are developing, these guys and girls are developing. So the golf course conditions are just outstanding. I mean, even in this heat, our irrigation system is working tremendously at both facilities. You know, we're able to keep it green. The greens are better than I've ever seen them. People are really responding by seeing the value that we offer in our county golf courses, and our rounds are up this year. We're doing very well. Our events are going over very well. So, you know, nothing but positive comments about the golf courses. Our sand traps are the big negative. You know, it's hard to keep 147 sand traps at Brightondale all stirred up and playing consistently. You know, the irrigation and the blue spruce really, really turned out well. The cart paths at Petrifying Springs are deteriorating. They are spidering, they are cracking up, and, you know, we're hopefully going to be asking for some repaving money for that for next year. Projects that we're working on, the Emerald Ash cleanup. We have cleaned up all the stumps at Brightondale. All of them have been ground. There was about 270 that were ground there by Petrifying Springs Park. We're doing it all in-house by ourselves. We purchased this new tool cat, so we had that vehicle, and we're doing this, our stump grinding. But to try to keep up with all the mowing and the stump grinding, you know, we're doing the best that we can with the staff that we have. But we do have to dig out all the grindings at Brightondale and put the dirt in and then seed it. But now, with this weather, this heat, and a lack of rain, is not the best time to be seeding anyway. So we'll do that a little bit closer to the fall. Again, the Blue Spruce Irrigation, Midwest Irrigation, did a tremendous job. They were about 3 weeks to a month behind by the time that they finished because of all the wet weather this spring, but they were an excellent company to work for. We had, I think, 3 vendors for the irrigation, you know, because it's more specific on what type of, you know, work that they're doing. And we, our bid came in about $100,000 less than what we had budgeted too, so. That was great, and Midwest is, you know, the premier of those irrigation companies. And then we've got the new tables and chairs in at Petrifying Springs. They look awesome. The chairs came out, you know, kind of had to order them online and through a website, and really turned out just what we wanted, relaxing chairs with arms that you can kick back and hopefully sit around and watch a ball game, you know, have a beverage and enjoy our concessions. So that looks really nice. And we took all the furniture from Petrifying Springs over to Brightondale too, so we have enough furniture there for our bigger outings.
Yes. Great report. And every time we come to one of these committee meetings, you rave about the golf courses, and rightly so, because a lot of people I work with play golf at Pets and Brightondale, and they don't just say how great they are. They do say that they're just wonderful. But just one question, because I think you're doing a fantastic job. You mentioned the golf paths. Mm-hmm. They're starting to crack. What about the parking lots? I noticed, is there any way of just filling them, or is that a big expense?
It is, you know, and plus it's the staffing. I mean, we're working on ways to take a look at that right now. The highway department has been very, very busy with all their paving, so Clement's been out, Gary's been out, Ray's was there, so we're looking.
It's on the radar.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious. That's what, I mean, and not this, they're fantastic. I was just curious if that was on the radar, which it is, so thank you.
Very good, thank you, Dan. Anything else for Dan?
We'll move on to Mike, the facility.
Start with ongoing projects and facilities. From the list last month, there's two projects remaining. One is at the safety building. The project was for upgraded security and evidence in the ID Bureau. There was a three-pronged attack to that project. One was reinforcing some doors, welding so they were more secure going into the building, into the room, I should say. That was done on the 30th. Another portion is installing some cameras, and the work of that is scheduled for mid-August. The third portion is to install some card readers and electric door strikes going into the room so they can control and monitor who goes in and out. The second one that was on the list from last month was at the job center. It was upgrading the fire panel because it was obsolete, and that was just a real quick, easy and done project. They started it on the 27th and finished it that day, so that one's off the list next month. What I'm going to add is at the pretrial facility, we've been doing some work on the exterior, mostly with this project, and one of the main portions of that project is to replace all the ceiling for the precast panels. Right now that's in pre-bid stage, and probably by next month we'll have something maybe going to bid soon. So that takes care of the ongoing list. The other list, which I think everybody has, that's the energy team project status list. Again, at the top, we've got ongoing projects, and the bottom half is complete projects. Most of the major projects are on the completed side of that. And, really, on the top part, it's ongoing. There's four, I guess you could call them major projects remaining, and they're mainly to convert exterior LED lighting to LED, exterior existing lighting to LED. They've been sitting there in pre-bid status for a long, long time, and that's because we've been working really hard to make sure the spec is done right, so that when this is all done, we don't have any problems with wrong part numbers for light fixtures. So we're pretty detailed and difficult, but we're getting word that this week we're going to be ready to go in bid soon, so we're kind of excited to get going on those. The only change from the list is moving down LED exit signs at the job center. Those are actually completed now, so we're moving down. And the last thing I want to talk about that's not on the list, since the ongoing part of the list is getting small, we had another energy assessment done at the job center this time. And we got a list of the projects from the Focus on Energy engineers. And it's a pretty long list, but it's not very complicated. That building doesn't have a lot of real difficult systems, just HVAC, hot water, lighting, things like that. He didn't find a lot of big things, but the bulk of what he found for energy savings for us was just converting some fluorescent tubing to LED lighting. So those projects will be showing up on the top list probably by next week.
Thank you, Mike. Anything for Mike Bill?
Just a comment on this. This is something the committee has asked for on an ongoing basis, this project status list. And thank you for bringing it forward. We appreciate the information. Just to fill committee members in on this whole project, it's really a three-part thing. You have to have Wisconsin Energy's on board, you have to have a lighting supplier on board, and you have to have someone that can manage the whole thing, which is Mike's forte. So to get it all put together in a commercial, kind of industrial situation is much different than your own home. You have to really kind of be dialed in. When you look at these paybacks, and I've commented on this before, I'll comment on it again, some of these paybacks on projects, you're looking at 8, 10, 12, 15 years for paybacks to see your money back. On this, we're looking at 2.3, 1.6, everything within a year or two, the county saves money, we're friendly to the environment, and it takes a certain amount of perseverance to get this thing done, so thank you for doing it.
Thank you, Mike.
The KCC Highway Garage Roof Replacement Project is officially done. We did our final project closeout walkthrough with our roofing consultant and the contractor. All the punch list items are complete. We had a total estimate from our consultant that does this for a living of this roof project of $526,000. Team effort. We did the engineering last year. We went out to bid first week of January. We had 15 contractors show up for the walkthrough. We had 9 bids, and Carlson Roofing out of Racine was the winning bidder, and the total job cost us $323,000. So we were under budget by $203,000. So it was well planned, well executed.
I just want to piggyback on that, Mr. Chairman. So that's one of the strategies that we're employing now, is that we really are, even once the budget's approved in November, basically is when it's finalized, we're trying to have all our ducks in a row on these bigger projects by December, so we can go out to bid then when contractors are hungry and get stuff staged so it's good to go. And guys' portfolios are empty. And they had 13 guys show up for the pre-bid. We've never had that happen. And the construction business is fairly busy, so that was, it won't always work, but that's a strategy that Frank, we're going to keep it, trying to do that as often as we can.
Again, it was a team effort, you know, the whole department to get that done that way, and it really paid dividends for the county taxpayer. And we had an excellent quality project. We had very good specs, very solid specs. So everybody's built fitting apples to apples. Next item is the fire alarm system replacement project at the courthouse. A large project. The PO was finally issued to Simplex. They were the winning bidder. They're submitting people for background checks because it is a sensitive area. So their people will be vetted. They have to take the drawings from our electrical engineer, add their information to it, send it to the state to approve it. The fire alarm process there, and by the time everything gets said and done, when it gets back to us and they're ready to go, we were hoping August, it looks more like mid-September, but we should still be fine with this project. Next item is the PSP generator replacement project. As I alluded to before, the old generator was at the end of its life, 30 plus years. And as we dug into it more, we realized that we really needed to plan for the future loads. Part of it's the PSB second floor. So having said that, planning for the future kind of grew a little, but we've got everything, our ducks in a row. We're going to be sending the bids out by July 22nd. Next item, the PSB second floor project. We continue to work on some preliminary drawings. We've got things pretty good as far as at this level. We're actually hoping to get conceptual budgets back by the end of this week.
Frank, keeping us up to date very well. All right, well, thank you, Frank. And now we'll go on to the busiest man in the highway department, Gary.
Yeah, we are busy. Our asphalt paving operations pretty much dominate our summer activities from on the county side. We've been doing a lot of paving. We've been working in Fox River Park for the parks. We finished County Trunk Highway D project. We're just finished County Trunk Highway P out in Randall, and while we were out there, the town of Wheatland said, well, as long as you're in the area, could you pave a couple roads for us too? So we did go ahead and spent about a week paving some different town roads for the town of Wheatland. Of course, that's all on a contractual basis, so we're reimbursed for those costs, and it's a good source of revenue for the highway division. And then the Union Pacific Railroad called last week, said they were interested in doing two repairs on railroad crossings, one on Highway E, just west of Highway 31, and also some work on Highway L, just west of Highway 31. So they actually started the work on Highway E today. That section of Highway E is closed. They're completely reconstructing that that crossing. And at the same time that they do that, we come in and we reconstruct the approaches to the rails. The railroad's only responsible for four from the outside rail, 4 feet. That's all they are responsible for, and that is all they will do. You don't get a very good ride when you only pay 4 feet on each side of the rail. So what we do is we work together with them, and we reconstruct the approaches make sure that you get a really good ride over the crossing. So we're doing that on Highway E this week. Also over on Highway L, which happens to be on the detour route for Highway E, but when the railroad comes to town and says they're going to want to redo crossings, you don't turn them down. So a little bit of inconvenience for the public, but it'll just be for a few days, and in the long run, we're all better off getting that work completed. So kind of throws off our schedule on paving because, you know, we got to do the town work, got to do the railroad work, thought we were doing county roads, but that's pretty much our life all the time in the paving business. So, it's going well though, and the guys, they're doing a really high quality work, so happy with that. Bids were open for the Highway S and N intersection reconstruction. The low bidder was LaLande Construction, and that cost was within our engineer's estimate, so that project has been awarded and likely begins sometime after August 1st. So that went well. Pavement marking contract the bids were open, and that was awarded to Century Fence. That actually came in exactly on our engineer's estimate, but that's pretty easy estimate to do. Those costs are fairly consistent. So that's the contractor that does all the centerline restriping and edge line and all the painting that you see on the county trunk system. Tomorrow, the bids will be open for the new fuel system here at the county center. And I misspoke at last month's meeting. I said that our budget was $350,000. Our budget is actually $450,000. It's still likely to be less than what the bids come in at, although you just never know. We'll find out tomorrow, and then we will report back to you if any adjustments need to be made to that budget. Next week, the Country Thunder event is going on out in Twin Lakes. If those of you that tend to spend most of your time east of I-94 probably not make much difference. Those of you that are west of I-94, it's a big issue, and we participate to some extent. We used to participate a lot in traffic control and that type of thing. Over the years, Country Thunder's become very self-sustaining. We do very little now, but we do have employees that are on call and can come in and deal with any traffic or highway related issues that come up with that event. It's a big traffic impact on the county system, and we basically shut down any operations that require lane closures west of I-94. We move everything east, and we do activities east of the I for that week or so. So and we have plenty to do. We've got paving projects to do east of I-94, amongst other things. So that's happening. And then just finally, we're in the process of hiring new employees for the highway department. We've done interviews, have really pleased with the quality of the candidates, and they're going to be making offers to five additional employees for the highway. Those five, one of which opening from a retirement, and four new employees that will be working on the state side of the maintenance, so that there's no impact to our or additional cost to the county levy. That those costs of those additional employees will be through the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. So that's happening.
Any questions, Supervisor Blanchard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I hear you right that the Union Pacific only gave you a week's notice before they were coming out?
Correct.
Is that typical?
Yes, it's pretty typical.
Because I seem to remember it, because they reconstructed the spur that crossed Highway 50, mm-hmm. and I know that they gave the state and the city all tons of notice. Did they just think?
The whole 50 saga was, there was a lot more to it than you probably know about, but it they sometimes they give you, you know, a few weeks notice, sometimes a week, it's not, to answer your question, no, it's not unusual at all for 1 week's notice, and you just can't say no, because it's a struggle.
For another year.
It can be longer.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Sorry that you got to deal with that. Out of curiosity, the reconstruction of S&N and then the pavement markings, how many contractors bid on each one of those?
The S&N reconstruction, I believe there was four. And LaLonde, I believe, came in about $535,000, I believe. I didn't bring the information with me yet. And the next lowest bidder was fairly close. They were within a few thousand dollars, which is unusual, but I guess good if you're a contractor. The pavement marking, we only had one bid received this year.
And I was curious about that, because I seem to remember there's not many out there.
We actually had four bids taken out, which was surprising. There's usually two players, this year we only received the one from Century Fence. They kind of go back and forth with this other contractor, you know, one good year. Year to year, you just never know. But there's not a big cost difference in pavement market. You pay per lineal foot of paint that they put down, and the, I mean, it can vary hundredths of a cent, you know. There's just not that much difference. So we're, even though we only had one bid, we were very confident that it was a fair price to us.
Because it was close to or under budget? Or
it was exactly to the penny on of what we expected it to be. That's what it came in at.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Any other questions? Bill?
Just a question. How many FTEs are you looking for currently?
Five full-time highway employees. And
so there are six, I thought there were six, Gary, but five that are coming on. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought there were six ultimately, but I don't want to.
It's five.
I defer to Gary.
What's so fun?
Yeah, it's the four state and then one replacing the
retirement.
Marcus retirement.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Mm-hmm. Any questions on catering while you're still here?
It was making me hungry, though.
Alrighty then. We'll move on, Ray.
Just a couple things, Mr. Chairman. There's the first item is the resolution that actually went around earlier this evening, but it's a resolution to purchase some floodplain property. This hasn't typically come to our committee, but with the merging of Planning and Development Services under Public Works umbrella now, when these things happen, it'll come through this committee before it goes on to finance and PETA. So basically, this is for people that aren't familiar with it, this is out in that area in the Fox River floodplain. The reference I use is if you go down Highway 15, you see Louisa's, it's behind there. And this is one more property. We've purchased about 170 properties back there already. It's really an attempt to just get that area cleaned out so there aren't issues when there is flooding inevitably in those areas. The reason we wanted to move on this when it went on the market is because Andy Bueller is the head of planning and development. He went out and checked it out, and this particular property is on a stilt-like kind of a foundation that they've created. So it technically could probably be marketable. I mean, they're trying to sell it. I don't think anybody else is interested in it. I don't know that. But most of the properties are not. They're just at grade level, and when it floods, they completely trash. This one would still be damaged in that event, but they made some attempt to kind of cobble together a stilt-like structure. So we want to get this thing and get it taken care of and cleaned out as quickly as we can. That's why we're making the recommendation to make the purchase now, put the money in place to do it, because we didn't have money in the budget for this property.
Supervisor Basham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 7557 Sherwood Drive, is that the address?
That could be. Jim's got actually a map here.
It says Sherwood Terrace, so it could be Sherwood Drive.
Could be Sherwood Drive. I, to be honest, I don't know that I got.
I got the address in the other room, but I don't think I. Unless
I got a map that shows the specific location of where it's at. If you can, I got. How many? Have you got many of these?
I brought 20 of.
I got these to pass out to the committee if members are interested.
Okay, no, this is not the one I'm thinking about.
This is there's two different maps.
Go ahead.
And you want me to pass them out?
Yeah. Okay. Just put them together, Jim. I'll do that. Good information.
You got one.
I got one.
Here, get another one.
All right, cool.
There's one map that's an overhead view, and then there's another map that's a close up.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is not the one. This is not the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, it's owned by Shoemate, I think is the name.
And how did they knock on our door and say, hey, I want to sell this?
Yeah, I believe the realtor did knock on our door. Yes.
Okay. Because there's another, and the reason why I'm asking, there's another property over on Sherwood that I was trying to guess at what the property might be, and that really kind of leads to my ultimate question about this resolution. How come we don't identify the property that you're seeking to acquire in the resolution?
I'm not going to say that there was an intent for it. We probably could include that in there, but when you were just asking me questions about it, it's actually not a bad idea that we didn't include it, even though I'd like to take credit and say that was a strategic move on our part. It was not, because we don't advertise what it is, because oftentimes Andy's biggest concern with these properties is that we do get speculators to purchase those properties, knowing full well that the county ultimately wants to take them down and just do a quick flip and increase the ultimate cost to us to get that property. So even though it was an oversight maybe on doing it, as you were talking, I'm kind of thinking it's a good thing that we left it out. So we try to keep it low key.
I certainly understand that, and being in real estate and I've handled transactions on behalf of the city of Kenosha before, I certainly get it when you start saying that I represent, you know, government here or government there, then all of a sudden people think you have big bags of cash. But for me, as I'm, you know, expected to vote on this item, I really don't even know what I'm voting on until you're describing what the property is. So
hopefully the maps will at least clarify where that property is located. And we can certainly get you.
It does.
It has the numbers on there?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does. When I get a packet of information and there's nothing attached to it other than, hey, I want $63,000 to buy property, you know, it makes it difficult for me to put my name on voting yes for it unless I now have more information that tells me what it is we're voting.
We will include that information going forward. We may not put it in the resolution, but we'll include it in the information packet later.
Perfect.
Luckily, Jim had prepared.
Perfect. Thank you.
As Ray said, we've purchased, I think, 170-some of these properties, ranging anywhere from $40,000 to $100,000. We used to apply for grants, and we were very good at getting them. But when we got $500,000, that would just basically, because some of these houses were a little more upscale, but they still were not saleable. They were in that floodplain, but relocating costs and bringing them down, it used to cost around $100,000 to do a house.
Come down.
Yeah.
Definitely come down.
So and if you take a drive down there, or if you ever knew the area before, that is such a human improvement than anyone that can go down. It's,
yeah, we want to take as many as we can when they come available.
Then I'll get you the information on the other property on Sherwood to see if you want to buy that.
Okay.
You don't have to use me for real estate services. I understand. Just come.
Director Franco?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do the people who have these homes, did they realize that they were in a floodplain?
I think so. I think
and
most
they still
of them do.
Bought or built anyway. Huh?
Yeah, either had them, you know, it's been in the family. I know that there's one in particular that you can see both from, well, you can see it if you actually go on Highway W on kind of the opposite side of the river. It's right on the point. It's on this very point. And it floods at the drop of a hat. And that person, I know that there has been contact with the planning and development folks. And that guy's adamant that he just loves it, regardless of it floods.
He's not going.
Yeah, he's not going. No. That guy right there, yeah. The guy that's right at the very point. Other than that, most of the others, I'm not aware of any other kind of situation where that's the case. But yeah, there's folks that, you know, there's another chunk of property similar to this at Camp Lake on I guess they call it southeast side of Camp Lake, right off Highway C. What's the name of the gardens subdivision there that is very similar, and there's a number of properties in there that the county owns, and there's a number that are on tax deed, could be owned by the county, but for various potential liability reasons, we haven't moved in that direction yet. So there's a couple areas in the county, but those are probably the two biggest ones. This area by the Fox River and the one area, Camp Lake Gardens, I guess what it's called.
Chamberlain's like that, Belmar's like that. There's a lot
Belmar,
of places.
That's it. Belmar.
A lot of places like that. And, you know, my dad, you know, we've been on that corner highway up in W since 1840. And he said a lot of that was sold in dry year. Mm-hmm. You know, people would just buy it.
Those days, yeah.
And then, you know, find out later. And I know people, grown adults that bought homes down there that didn't have a clue. And then their house flooded and they were surprised. When I grew up, they flooded every spring and sometimes they flooded in the summer. I mean, they flooded at least every year, you know, but and also, I don't know if this was part of it, but Pell Lake was this where if you bought a subscription to the Chicago Sun-Times, you got a lot in Pell Lake, but it was only like 14 feet. So then if you bought a couple prescriptions or subscriptions, so then a lot of the lots in Pell Lake to actually build a house, there's like 12 lots.
Really?
That's actually, I don't know about the subscription, but that's how that area is subdivided, in all small.
It was from newspaper subscriptions. That's how that became.
Interesting. I'd always wondered why you had to have so many lots to build one single family.
Because they were like 12, 10, yeah. 12 feet.
Yeah. And they take those newspapers, put them on the wall for insulation.
Right.
So the long and short of it, this resolution would need to go from us to PDIC Wednesday night and to the Finance Committee on Thursday night and then on to the County Board.
Any questions on this? It's pretty straightforward resolution.
And the money's coming from the savings that we had on the roof project. So.
Some of us have already signed this, so hopefully we
motion to approve.
Motion by Supervisor Green.
I'll second.
Second by Supervisor Gilmore. All those in favor of the governor?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
I don't know if we need to pass that one.
Do you want a new? I did create a new signature sheet.
I think out of for transparency, we should sign a new one.
I was going to say, I didn't sign the last one, so
I still need to sign.
While that's happening, I'll move on to Brookside update. As I indicated at the last meeting, we were dealing with some of the compromised soils, and we had come up with a way to kind of an engineered solution to that minimized really what it is it costs to get those. And it basically involved creating some additional ribs, I'll describe them as, underneath the slabs in the CDRF unit of the building, the two wings that are closest to Washington Road. That's all been completed. If anybody's driven by from a progress standpoint, you can see that the slabs have been poured for the entire CDRF unit. The walls are now up on the easternmost wing. The walls just started on Friday to go up on the westernmost wing. And those should all be completed depending on how the weather holds up this week. And we'll start to put trusses on those buildings, if not by the end of the week, next week. So it's going to now start to be very visually apparent what's going on out there fairly quickly. Now, since the last meeting, I don't believe we had hit the contaminated soils that we found. I don't think. I think it was just compromised soils last time. Contaminated soils were hit early in the month. And what it was when the existing Brookside was built in 95, there were three fuel tanks that were under that building. Or actually, two of them were under the existing building. There was two 10,000-gallon fuel oil tanks for the boilers in the old 1956 Brookside. Those two were removed as part of what needed to happen to build the existing Brookside. Those were actually under what is the 300 wing. And everything was done per the requirements at that time. There was also a 300-gallon gasoline tank that was located in between the old 1956 Brookside and the current building. And so that wasn't touched at all when we took down the old building. It wasn't, we didn't get involved in that. The actual tank itself was removed, 300-gallon small tank, in 1993 as part of when the other Brookside, the existing building, was being constructed. They took it out, and they did whatever mitigation was required at the time. The bottom line is that mitigation didn't require them to remove all the contaminated soil. So when we started to construct the basement, it was pretty much everybody decided there's something going on here. And so we had to involve some environmental engineers to come in. And the good news is the majority of that soil was where the basement is now. So it makes the basement again look like another stroke of genius. But it really just happened to be that that's where the bulk of this soil was. It had to be removed, but we couldn't just remove it and put it somewhere else. So it had to be, it was all tested. We actually put a couple strategies in place to minimize how much we had to remove. We still took out, at last count, about 85 truckloads out to waste management, the landfill. And we did some things to minimize, like I say, what we had to remove to create, to meet all the specifications and everything established by the DNR. We're pretty much done with that now. And so we've moved on to creating footings and foundations in the basement. And now that part of the project is going in earnest, the last kind of getting stuff out of the ground. We are, though, into dealing with the compromised soil, so the stuff, the extra ribbing we had to put under slabs, and the contaminated soils. I don't have firm estimates yet, but it's probably going to be somewhere in the $250,000 range to deal with all that. Now, we have a contingency of about $580,000, so when these numbers are finally resolved, this is going to be the biggest chunk of that contingency is going to be for these soils. It would have been nice if we would have been, you know, maybe at the $100,000 range to deal with soils and get out of the ground. I still don't think we're in a crisis situation at all. We're just going to really have to monitor things as we go forward. But we knew the biggest risk was going to be dealing with the soils. The rest of this stuff, are there going to be things that tap into that contingency? Absolutely. But at this point, I'm pretty darn confident we'll be able to manage those unless something really strange happens. So that's kind of the biggest update as it relates to Brookside. Once we're out of the ground, the footings and foundations, we should be actually, the trades will kind of just cycle now, kind of from CBRF through the wings and then on to the rehab unit. So as walls are constructed, it's going to be moving then, and it'll just kind of phase through and ripple through. The analogy we use is the boa constrictor that ate the goat. Basically, the goat is moving through that thing, and that's kind of how the trades are going to cycle through this now. So that's a good graphic. Just want to make sure you guys are awake. Yeah. Okay. That's pretty much it for Brookside. Department report, I think most folks are aware. If not, formally, Matt's been appointed the interim director by the county executive as of last week, but he'll need to go through a formal process. So there's going to be a formal presentation to this committee, and then I think he has to go to finance and administration, and then the formal board as a department in a formal board approval. But he's been appointed interim director, so that'll be coming through at our August meeting. We'll do that formal activity. That's pretty much it from my perspective.
Thanks, Ray. Anybody want to make a motion? Sure, so we have Gilmore.
Second.
Yeah, looks like
that.
Let's see, really the
apple.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.